mutual decision, you're going to have mutual rules, and you're going to want to debate in front of crowds that are friendly to you. There's no doubt that in Northern Virginia in particular, the League of Women Voters is a front for the Democratic Party. They are not nonpartisan. They are not moderate. They are flaming liberals who front for the Democratic Party
these
in Northern Virginia.
These flaming liberals
yes,
are
the League
ones
of Women Voters.
Who sponsored the presidential debates
right.
for decades.
Right.
And you're claiming they're flaming liberals?
I'm not...
Carter-Ford debate, Reagan-Carter...
I'm not casting dispersions on the national organization. I am saying that in Northern Virginia, if you look at the Arlington, Fairfax, Alexandria, Falls Church, or Loudoun League of Women Voters, they are front groups for the Democratic Party.
But Mike, as long as it's open to the public, I mean, you had Staten say, I want to go to this gated military retiree committee. And Herring said, I'll debate you there as long as it's open to the public. And Staten said, no, we don't want the public to come. Come on.
Well, Each organization has the right to set its own rules as to whether or not it's open to the public or open only to their members, what the rules of participation are, et cetera. Now, obviously, Supervisor Staten's strategy is that he's going after his voters. Let's face it.
It's like Bush town hall meetings. He only goes to people who already agree with him.
It's a special election. Special elections are not about issues. They're not about, you know, who appeals to the most voters. They're about focusing on your base and getting them to the polls. Unfortunately, very unfortunately, there's only going to be 22-23% of the electorate that comes out for this particular, despite you and me
but
saying
everyone that's watching this program is going to come out because I think it is about issues. Let's look at his mentor, Dick Black, because Mark Staten doesn't have much of a record.
His dad is his mentor. He happened to have fallen in love with Dick Black's daughter.
Okay. But we know that one of the reasons Dick Black got kicked out, at least in my view, and you may disagree with me, is because he wasn't focused on the issues that Virginians care about, transportation, education. He was focused on punishing gay people and restricting abortions and all the issues that Republicans throw in when they want to appeal to a certain Christian fundamentalist segment, but not when they're appealing to everyday needs of Virginians. And Staten's following his footsteps. Staten was complaining about a high school play that happened to feature a football player who's gay, and he was cutting pay to teachers. Don't you think people care a lot more about teacher salaries than punishing a school for having a play that features homosexuality?
Well, I think what he's doing is focusing on his base. The objective in a special election is to get more of your people to come out than somebody else's. In a general election, you can't control everybody who comes out because there are a lot of good government types who come out. You have to appeal to them. What Mick is doing is he's following in his father's footsteps. He's appealing to the Republican base. I don't know how much of this Senate district, the 33rd Senate district, by the way, for those of you who don't know, I don't know how much of it overlaps with Delegate Black's old Delegate district. But you started this off by saying, why did Delegate Black lose, or why did the voters retire him from office and send Dave Poisson down there? I believe it was because the district had changed over time.
Well, there I agree.
When Delegate Black got elected, he got elected rather comfortably and won a couple races after that with, you know, high 50s. And then there was a huge influx of people. Those people were not necessarily the conservative Republicans that put Delegate Black into office in the first place. And rather than compromise his principles or follow the district and see what the people wanted, he provided conservative principled leadership, which was not what the people of that district were looking
And I don't think it's what they're looking for now. I think you'll see Fairfax County is changing. Loudoun County is changing. Fairfax voted majority for Kerry. First time, I think, they've ever voted the majority Democratic in a presidential election, at least that I'm aware of.
No, they actually voted...
For Gore in 2000?
I think they voted for Bush in 2000, but they voted... In a presidential election, you may be right.
In
36 years.
Yeah, they voted for Warner.
It's been a very long time. They used to vote for Democrats
The Democrats supported segregation. We understand.
Back before they became aware of what the right thing was.
But the point is that it is changing. And I think that people in Northern Virginia, in Fairfax County, also in Loudoun County, which is very much focused on development, whether it should happen, whether it shouldn't happen, they care about transportation. They care about getting out of traffic. They care about good schools. They don't care about punishing gay people. And yet, what do I find? The Republicans in Virginia, there's a new bill to prevent lesbians from having kids. Is that what Virginians should be focused on rather than schools and transportation?
If you want to talk about those kinds of social issues, that's an ancillary piece of what's going on. The real focus in the General Assembly is whether or not they're going to pass for the second time the constitutional amendment that defines marriage as an institution participating in by one man and one woman. As you know, and I think most of our audience probably knows, they passed it last session of the General Assembly. In the Virginia Commonwealth, you need to pass it in two consecutive General Assemblies, and then it goes that next November to the public for ratification in a referendum. That is really the key issue that we're looking at in terms of social legislation.
I don't think it is, Mike. I think that Virginians really want to focus on transportation, on getting their kids
to
school.
No, I said social legislation.
Well, I understand, but my problem with Mick Staton and with Dick Black is, unlike other Republicans in Virginia, and there are Republicans who are focused on education and transportation and other things, these guys seem solely focused on the social issues. You go to Mick Staton's website, and all he talks about is he talks about saving a puppy, which I'm glad to hear about. But other than that, he talks about, you know, being against this high school play. And I just think that Virginians would rather have a guy like Mark Herring, who's been in Loudoun County all his life, who's been on the Board of Supervisors for 16 years, knows how the process works, and instead of focusing on punishing gay people, is actually focusing on helping Virginians.
Well, we're going to find out on Election Day. And it's January 31st, and I certainly hope that everybody, no matter what side they're on, takes the time to go to the polls.
Me too. It's very important because these kinds of things determine what kind of legislation we deal with in Virginia. So I hope you will go and get out the vote. If you want to call in, we're now going to switch to national issues. I want to talk specifically about my concerns that we've got a runaway president, whether issues of eavesdropping or torture or putting people in jail without charges. These are really horrible issues that I think we have to deal with. If you want to call in, either on our Virginia segment or on talking about George Bush, the local number is 571-749-1166, 571-749-1166. I'd like to take a little break, but when we come back, I want to return, focus on George Bush, and focus on what I think is his going around and above the law. We'll be right back after this.
Mrs. DeBruzzo, I'm Ed McMahon, and we're signing up people for...
Yes, I am.
Mr. Murphy, Ed McMahon, we're starting up... No, 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 no.
Dreams
no.
really do come true.
Hombre, dinero, dinero.
No.
Yes,
Ed McMahon,
see.
Ed McMahon.
Yes, Ed McMahon, we're having our first
Ed
ever...
Ed McMahon.
Yes. Tuesday night at the high school. We're starting up the neighborhood watch in this area, and here's all the information.
Stevie, get down here, please.
No, he's just here.
Five, six, seven, eight.
No tango, Danelle. Neighborhood watch. We're having this neighborhood watch, the first one.
Right.
I'll come back.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Start a neighborhood watch. It's just one of the many ways you can help make America stronger. To find out how, call or log on for this free guide.
When I was young, my dad always told me to dream big and dream often.
My mom and dad were always my biggest cheerleaders. I've been very fortunate to have parents that care, but some kids aren't so lucky.
That's why the Major League Baseball players trust for children.
Same with Volunteers of America, to help kids everywhere.
For more than 100 years, Volunteers of America has helped children, families, and many others rebuild their lives.
Our Share with a Child partnership wants you to give kids your time, guidance, and support.
Work together to give every child a chance. Find out how you can help a child dream big. Call 1-800-899-0089 or visit volunteersofamerica.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifence Strategies. And if you want to comment on anything we say today, you're welcome to do so. Just give us a call, 571-749-1166. We talked about local issues. Now, Mike, I want to turn your attention to national issues. It seems to me that there are a lot of things that have been going on this week. We had, of course, the Alito hearings and discussion of whether he'll be filibustered or whether he'll be voted in. There was a lot of talk about Jack Abramoff and all the scandal related to lobbyists. Both parties came out with reforms. We can go into that. But to me, the greatest concern. Also, we want to talk about who's going to replace Tom DeLay. About John Boehner, Roy Blunt. To me, I think they have a lot of similarities to Tom DeLay and to lobbying scandals. But I still think, for me, the most important concern is a president that really doesn't feel constrained by the law. A president that feels like he can do whatever he wants at will, whether it's torture or eavesdropping or putting people in jail without charges. And my big fear with Alito, totally apart from the Vanguard or conflict of interest things, which I think are much smaller, my biggest concern about Judge Alito is that he will allow a president like George W. Bush to avoid the constitutional limits that constrain every president of the United States. That's my concern. There's this theory called the unitary executive theory, where the president signs a law that would prohibit torture, but then there's a statement saying, basically, I don't have to follow it, mm-hmm. even though John McCain and two-thirds of the House and the Senate were ready to vote for it over his veto. My concern is Alito will protect a president like that. What's your thought?
Well, there's no doubt that Alito is qualified. Now, you may object to certain of his views, but the man has a judicial temperament. He's got the experience. He's got the background. He's got the resume. He's got everything that you look for in a Supreme Court justice. I don't think you can keep someone off the court because you object to their particular point of view on something as long as they're otherwise qualified. Otherwise, the Republicans would have kept Justice Ginsburg off the court.
But they didn't. They supported her.
Right, exactly. Which is what the Democrats ought to do for Judge Alito.
You know, bringing up Justice Ginsburg really isn't fair because Justice Ginsburg is a moderate. She actually voted more with her Republican colleagues on the D.C. Court of Appeals when she was down there than the Democrats. Clinton went to get advice and consent, even though the Democrats mm-hmm. controlled the Senate. And who gave Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's name but Orrin Hatch?
Orrin Hatch, right.
A conservative Republican from Utah. She's maybe on the liberal to moderate end. But this is my fear is that Alito is not a John Roberts, for example, who I already have difficulties with because of his recent vote in the Oregon case, mm-hmm. which we can talk about, actually saying that a state can't decide its own law on a person's right to die. But to me, Alito's far to the right, and not in the right way of John Roberts. I'm afraid he'll become just like another Robert Bork, another candidate who was, he had the education to be a judge. I wasn't saying Robert Bork was unqualified, but would have been an awful Supreme Court justice. Robert Bork supported segregation. He supported, he thought that civil rights laws were unconstitutional. And I don't think that you can just say views don't matter. Clearly, in Bork's case, his views should and do matter. And my concern about Alito is this unitary executive theory, where he believes the president can simply disregard a law of Congress when it comes to wartime.
Well, it's views that are outside the mainstream. That you would be worried about. There is overwhelming evidence that the mainstream of American people, via the polls, support what the president is doing. So it's not outside the mainstream. Last I looked at it about 2 weeks ago, Mark, we had about 73% of the American people that thought that this domestic surveillance of suspected al-Qaeda sympathizers, al-Qaeda agents, whatever they were, some sort of terrorists, was a good thing, and they supported the president doing it. Now, you can't say that's outside. When 73% of people support something, you can't say it's outside the mainstream.
It's outside the law. It's outside the Constitution. Now, maybe the president's spinning everything well. He's saying, look, I didn't need to get a court warrant because I'm above the law, and even though the Constitution and the law requires me to get a warrant, I'm king, and I can do whatever I want. Look, when it comes to al-Qaeda sympathizers, every American supports eavesdropping on them, and how do you do it? You go and you use the law, you go to the court, you get a warrant, and you get it. No one is saying that courts would refuse a warrant to eavesdrop on them. The problem is, when the president isn't constrained by the courts, he's going and he's eavesdropping on Quakers in Vermont, all of us, he's reading our emails, he's trying to get Google to squeal on all of us. This is a president doing a lot more than al-Qaeda sympathizers.
Come on, let's address Google and take that right off the table. He's asking Google for statistical evidence, not for any individual records or anything like that. And I personally don't see why they would need it, but I don't have any problem with them getting statistical evidence on what kind of websites pop up when somebody does a search on a certain type of term or word or anything like that. But getting back to Justice Alito, He is overwhelmingly qualified. You know, I'm beginning to worry about you, Mark, because the only people who are really against Judge Alito right now are People for the American Way, the National Organization of Women, and MoveOn.org.
And at least and 43 putting, Democratic
and,
senators.
And you're putting yourself... Well, the Democratic Party has allowed itself to become a wholly owned subsidiary of MoveOn.org.
Oh, come on.
And as long as you continue to allow yourselves to do that, all the other weaknesses that the Republican Party might display pale by comparison.
Mike, are you really saying the president's above the law?
No.
Are you really saying the president isn't constrained by...
No.
Congress passed the law in 1978
right.
that said if you want to do surveillance, you go to a court and get a warrant. If you want to do secret surveillance, you go to a secret court called the FISA court, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and you get a warrant. Bush, without telling the FISA court, just simply decided that he was going to disobey the law, and he lied to us about it. They asked Americans, he said, at least on four separate occasions, he said, don't worry about surveillance. I always go and I get a warrant. He lied to us. And now he's telling us, I only use Al-Qaeda sympathizers, or I only want Google statistical information. The same president who lied to us about nuclear weapons in Iraq, weapons of mass destruction, lied to us about outing the CIA agent, and now we're supposed to believe him when he says, oh, even though I didn't go to a court to get permission, I'm only looking at Al-Qaeda sympathizers. If that's all he were looking at, he wouldn't have had to hide from the law.
He's not hiding from the law. The case law shows over and over again that in time of war, the president does have extraordinary powers to do what needs to be done to protect the American people. This is not something... Come on, Mark, you're a lawyer.
I don't know this case law you're talking about.
You don't know about decisions that have allowed the president...
Yes, I know Franklin Delano Roosevelt put Japanese Americans in concentration camps, and that was upheld by the court.
Right.
But I also know that most Americans don't think that was a good decision.
It wasn't a good decision in retrospect.
We apologized for it. And
gave compensation.
And gave compensation for it.
Right.
So, to me, this body of law that you're citing is like citing Dred Scott decision, which protected slavery. You know, there is this body of law out there, but clearly Americans don't believe the president should be above the law. If he's doing nothing wrong,
but he's not,
why didn't he get warrants?
Why didn't
he get the warrants?
He's not doing anything above the law because the law supports what he's done.
It doesn't.
Now, you may say that it was a bad decision.
No, I'm saying it's against the law. We can argue about whether it's a good or bad decision or not. That we can disagree on. What I'm saying is expressly contrary to the law. And it's not just me saying it. The nonpartisan Congressional Research Service, which is a bunch of lawyers that work for Congress, heck, it's a Republican Congress. They're the ones who hire and fire them. But I'm not saying they're partisan. I know these people. These are dedicated public servants. And they have written repeatedly that what Bush is doing is outside the law. FISA, the whole statute, was designed in 1978 because of the excesses of Richard Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover. They were spying on Martin Luther King and other political activists. And they say, look, if you want to spy domestically, you got to get a warrant. And my question for you is, if Bush was doing nothing wrong, if he was spying on Al-Qaeda terrorists, which we all agree is fine, why didn't he go get the warrant?
Why didn't Bill Clinton get a warrant when he spied on Alder James? For those of people who recognize the name but don't remember, Alder James was the FBI agent who had turned bad and was giving away all kinds of good classified information to the Russians. And President Clinton, on his own, no court, no nothing, authorized the wiretapping of Alder James, and that was the way we got much of the information that we used to arrest him and convict him and to assess the damage that was done to our international counterespionage program. Now, it seems to me that, you know, if it's good for Bill Clinton, it ought to be good for anybody.
Well, let's deal with that subject. My understanding is, and I'll look this up on Alder James, is that, first of all, I think when you have an employee of the federal government, particularly someone with a high intelligence clearance, Alder Gaines was high up in the CIA, wasn't he?
No, he was an FBI agent.
So he's high up in the FBI. This is a guy who is tasked with keeping America's secrets. It's just like you can give a drug test to a guy that's flying planes, but you can't give a drug test to your janitor. This is a guy who has the highest top secret clearance and was suspected of selling stuff to the Soviet Union. To me, that's a very different case from going around and checking everybody's Google records. The other thing about the law, and I'm not sure about this, I want to check it out, is I do know that prior to 1994, physical searches were allowed without a warrant, even though eavesdropping wasn't, and it was brought to Bill Clinton's attention, and he said, you know what, that's wrong, and he passed the law with Clinton's support to say that you need a warrant even for that, and since that time there haven't been any. Now, I don't know if Alder Gaines was before that time.
I forget exactly when.
94, 93.
In that area. No. Well, yeah, in that area.
So that may be why it was legal. But the heart of it is this. Why isn't Bush going to the FISA court? Why do you think he's not going to the FISA court?
Because his legal advice is that he doesn't need to, that he has the authority as commander-in-chief during time of war to take those actions that are necessary to protect the life, safety, health, and security of the American people. He is doing so, and there's no doubt that we're going to get a court decision on this because the ACLU has already filed suit against the president.
And they need to begin impeachment proceedings
As
well.
And for the 200 and however many year struggle it's been between the three branches of government as to who has the authority to do what under what circumstances, we are going to get, in probably about two more years, yet another decision from the Supreme Court that will tell us whether or not the president has the authority to do what he's doing.
Now, Mike, let me tell you why I think this is not just a conflict of interest between Bush and Congress and the courts, but actually it's impeachable offense. Let me tell you why. When George Bush decided that he was going to imprison American citizens without trial, without due process, it was an extraordinary decision. To me, it was absolutely fundamentally against the Bill of Rights in our Constitution. In fact, the Supreme Court so found with regard to Jose Padilla and Yasser Hamdi, American citizens held in jail without trial. I mean, again, I have no problem taking a terrorist, putting him on trial, even executing him. I support the death penalty for people like that. But to put a guy in jail for the rest of his life and not charge him with anything, to me, is Kafkaesque. But when Bush did that, when he did that, he said, this is what I'm doing to the American people. I think I have authority to do it under the law. And then there was a case filed, and it's gone through the courts. The eavesdropping, he didn't do that. He didn't say to America, I am not going to the courts to seek a warrant because I don't feel I have to. He didn't say that. Instead, he went and did it behind America's back, behind even the court's back, which made FISA so angry that they quit.
Of course he did. When you're eavesdropping on every call that goes into eastern Pakistan or Afghanistan or areas like that where al-Qaeda is known to be headquartered, you don't want to tell them through the Washington Post or the New York Times front page that you're listening to their phone calls.
Mike, that's got
you
nothing to do.
You just don't want to do that.
It's got nothing to do with not getting a warrant. First of all, we have an absolute right under the law. I'm sure you know this, that if there's a call between Pakistan and Afghanistan, we can monitor it. It's perfectly legal.
Right.
We don't need a warrant.
But we're talking about
the
calls between Pakistan and here, Kentucky.
Right. Right.
Or Oklahoma.
Right.
Or Santa Barbara.
And possibly calls between Kentucky and Oklahoma. I think the president's doing that, too. I can't prove it because he's doing it in secret without a warrant.
Once we find out that there's someone that has a track record of always calling into these areas where we know that there's a huge al-Qaeda presence, yes, then they follow up and they see what else they're talking about.
But why not get a warrant? The reason we have the Bill of Rights, is not... It's an easy case to say, this guy's a killer, we're going to pick him up and we're going to throw him in jail. That's an easy case. The tough case is when the people are innocent. We have put innocent people in prison. Under Bush, for example, I know he took the Uyghurs, this group of Muslims in Afghanistan. Some bounty hunter turned them over. Bush kept them in Guantanamo Bay for 2 years because they never had a trial to prove they were innocent. Heck, I will still believe in innocent until proven guilty. But in this case, we have people without even a court overlooking it. Now, for 2,000 years, we've had the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution that says if you want to search something or eavesdrop, people have the right to be secure in their persons, papers, and effects. And if you want to search them, you need probable cause, you need a warrant. If George Bush doesn't like the Fourth Amendment, then he should have a constitutional amendment to end the Bill of Rights. But to say, I don't have to obey the Constitution because I'm president, to me, that's an impeachable offense.
To the contrary. The president likes the Fourth Amendment. The president respects the Fourth Amendment. In fact, the president respects the entire Constitution, and that's why he's nominated Sam Alito to be justice on the Supreme Court.
How does eavesdropping without a warrant respect the Fourth Amendment?
He has the authority in the case law as commander-in-chief during a time of war to conduct these rather broad activities that will protect the safety and security of the American people. Now, as we've discussed, there has been a lawsuit filed. The Supreme Court in about 2 years will rule on it, and we'll find out whether or not his opinion or whether your opinion is the prevailing opinion. I suspect that in time of war, the Supreme Court is going to side with the president.
Not at all, and I'm going to give you the constitutional reason why not.
All right.
But first, I understand that there's a caller on the line. Caller, welcome to the Insight. Nope, the caller is gone. All right, well, I hope you'll call back. We'll take a break. It's 571-749-1166. 571-749-1166. When we come back, I'm going to be reading the Constitution to my good friend Mike Lane and tell him why the president doesn't have authority to go outside the law.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, it's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, you missed your studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, Mr. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, Mr. What-was-your-name-again. Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop and a spirited debate between myself, host of the Inside Scoop, and Mike Lane. He is the president of Intellifant Strategies. It's his job to help get Republicans elected, and myself as a former Democratic staffer, legislative counsel, in fact, to the House Judiciary Committee and House Homeland Security Committee. It's my job to protect the Constitution from the people that Mike Lane wants to support. And before the break, I brought out my trusty pocket constitution, a document that I revere very much.
And carry with you at all times.
And carry with me at all times, because it's a sword as well as a shield. And we were talking about the presidential power
right. To
eavesdrop without a warrant. And I said that he doesn't have power under the Fourth Amendment to do it. And the Fourth Amendment, by the way, folks, and you should know your constitution, says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. That's a protection for you and for me and for Mike. It says that if the police have reason to believe we've committed a crime or terrorism or anything like that, absolutely, they can go to a judge, they can get a warrant, they can search. But they can't do it outside that. And Congress has the right to regulate this kind of thing. And during the break, actually, I showed Mike part of the Constitution. And he argued that the presidential power as commander-in-chief means that in wartime, he can oversee all, usurp all of this. First of all, the only people who have the right to declare war is Congress. That's another express provision of the Constitution.
Correct.
And it does say the president should be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States. I don't think it was the Army or the Navy that was eavesdropping on calls, but let's just assume that the NSA is included in this Army and Navy that the Constitution refers to. If so, then Congress has the right to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. What did Congress do? In 1978, they made a rule, and they said, Mr. President, there have been abuses, and therefore, if you want to do eavesdropping, you got to have a warrant. If it needs to be secret because of national security, you can go to the secret court called the FISA court. But they made the law very, very clear. And this president not only violated it, but he didn't do it openly. He didn't say, I believe I can throw people in jail without trial, as he did with Padilla. He secretly violated the law, which made FISA so mad that they quit. To me, it's very constitutional. And before I get to Mike, Aaron from Fairfax, I know you called in. Please feel free to call back. 571-749-1166. Take it away, Mike.
Let me start off by saying I stand corrected on at least one thing, and
okay.
That is that Alder James was a CIA agent
Fair
and
enough.
Not an FBI agent. So We'll get that on the record.
Okay.
What the president has done, and we all read the Constitution, and you're a lawyer, I'm not. Even among lawyers, you can have different interpretations as to what the Constitution means. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a split decision of the Supreme Court. Everything would be a 9-0 decision. But reasonable people can disagree, and reasonable people can look at things differently. The Supreme Court has in the past opined that the president does have extraordinary powers in times of war. Notwithstanding what you just read to me, notwithstanding the fact that that's the only provision that addresses the powers of the chief of the commander-in-chief during time of war, the Supreme Court has ruled that he or she does have extraordinary powers to protect the safety and security of the American people. President Bush got some very, very strong legal opinions indicating that what he is doing is consistent with Supreme Court case law and consistent with his role as commander-in-chief. Now, I, for one, happen to like the fact that he's eavesdropping on conversations between people in America who might happen to be American citizens who are placing all these phone calls over to areas where Al-Qaeda is known to exist and operate.
Do you like him to do it without a warrant?
I want those things listened to.
If they should be listened to, wouldn't the FISA court, which approves more than 90% of the warrants that go to them, wouldn't they approve it? And if they wouldn't approve it, wouldn't they have a good reason? Why do they have to go around the courts? Why does the president feel he can't be constrained by this document, the Constitution?
It's not that he's not constrained by it. It's that he doesn't need to. The Supreme Court opinion has given him the authority to go ahead and pursue these
things.
First
of all, the Supreme Court opinion you're talking about was in a declared war. It was World War II. It was the same opinion.
I don't think declared, undeclared. I mean, we're in a war, Mark. You can't say just because Congress has not declared war that we're not in a war. That just makes no sense.
You can't say that the president has extraordinary powers in wartime and then say that the declaration of war has no meaning. But the main thing is that this whole line of cases comes out of Korematsu, where Americans, Congress, President, everyone has said we were wrong to put Japanese and Americans in concentration camps. And I guess my question to you is...
And we were wrong.
So here's my question to you.
But we had the authority to do it.
Okay, well, let me ask you this.
It was a bad policy.
Let me ask you this. Is there any restriction on a presidential authority in wartime? Is there any? If he can put people in jail, can he round up hundreds of thousands of Arab Americans, whether or not it's good policy, does he have the authority, if Congress says, no, this is illegal, and the courts say, no, you need probable cause, does he have the authority to say, forget you, I'm doing it myself? Do you think he does have that authority?
I would not, I'd have to see
the exact... What are the limits?
No, I'd have to see the exact legislation. Clearly, you would need to adhere to something that was highly specific. If they said, do not do A... Well, then you couldn't do A.
But that's what Congress did in the eavesdropping statute. They said, do not do A.
This is a much grayer area than that. It's not as specifically black and white. We're not talking a fine pen here. We're talking a magic marker that has a lot of interpretation to it.
I'm afraid I disagree with you. At least according to Congressional Research Service, it is black and white, and this is a president that's knowingly violating the law. Aaron from Fairfax, do you agree with me or Mike or someone else?
I agree with Mike, actually.
Really?
I'm an Afghan American. I live in the Fairfax area. I believe, I was born in Afghanistan, but I was around 2 years old when my parents moved to the States. So we're actually refugees. And what I believe is that I think the president has the right to eavesdrop on certain, let's say certain people that make these phone calls to...
Aaron, he may be eavesdropping on you. Does that bother you? Even though you've done nothing wrong your entire life, to know that the president's listening in to all your phone calls with your girlfriend or your mother or whoever else, do you think the president has a right to do that when you've done nothing wrong?
Aaron, before you answer that, that's not a fair question, Mark, because he's not listening to him talk to his girlfriend.
We don't know that.
Yes, we do.
We have no court oversight. We have no congressional oversight. This is a president that's lied to us. I don't believe him.
We know that the president is recording thousands upon thousands of conversations between here and other parts of the world that are dangerous, and they have computer programs that are looking for keywords and pick them out, and only if they meet that criteria do they then listen to even the words.
But,
and that's clearly not what Aaron would be talking about with his girlfriend, is it, Aaron?
Exactly. He's not going to waste his time, whoever the group is it the FBI or the CIA, whoever's listening to these phone conversations, they're not going to waste their time on innocent you know, people from that area making calls. I don't know if, you know, how they're going to distinguish between what's right and what's wrong, or who's innocent and who's guilty, or what conversations, you know, because they could be speaking in code. There's a lot of different things that are involved here, and it takes a lot of strategy to put it together, that type of
Aaron, here's my problem, okay? If I could trust George Bush to always tell me the truth, to always be on the up and up, to never get anything wrong, to have perfect intelligence and a right honorable man, you know, maybe a benevolent dictator is what we want. You know, we could have a king and believe he's a good guy, and that's fine. But we have rules and procedures in place. And our government has not always been so pure in the past. We spied on Martin Luther King and found out of an extramarital affair that he had, which was not relevant to his politics, but was used to try to bring him down. This government, George Bush, is spying on Quakers in Vermont at an anti-war rally. Quakers have been they're against all wars. They're pacifists. And Aaron, it wouldn't surprise me if the mere fact that you're Afghan-American means he's spying on you. And the reason we have laws and courts and warrants is to say, hey, you need, under the Constitution, you need probable cause. You need reason to spy on someone. Can't you agree with me, Aaron, that if we have reason, we can all agree it's fine, but if we don't have reason, you know, the president needs to follow the law.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that. If we have reason, then I don't see anything wrong with it in times of war.
The reason we have courts overlooking the warrant procedure is to make sure that there are indeed reasons. And I'm not saying the president shouldn't spy on Al-Qaeda. Please don't think that. I'm saying the president, if he wants to spy on Al-Qaeda, should follow the Constitution, follow the law, get a warrant from a court. Thanks for your call, Aaron. I appreciate that.
Aaron, thank you so much.
Mike, do you have a comment, or should I go to the next caller?
Let's talk to Karina.
Karina from Alexandria. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Oh, we lost Karina. All right, Karina from Alexandria, I do hope you'll call back. We'll take a break and give you a chance to call back. Folks, if you want to join in the debate, you're welcome to do so. Toll-free number, 571-749-1166. 571-749-1166. We'll be right back. Hopefully, Karina will call back right after this.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
Okay, hon.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
What kind of man are you?
I'm a father.
Look here, my father was a father, and he smoked his brains out in the house.
Watch as he blows those smoke rings on my little red face.
You probably have asthma.
Asthma?
Schlasma.
I'm telling you, nothing's going to happen to your kids.
Don't swear when you're lying. You know very well that thousands of kids get bronchitis, ear infections, and even pneumonia from their parents' cigarette smoke. And didn't you promise your little angels you'd smoke outside?
Hey, Daddy.
Hi, Daddy.
Those little devils are just so sweet.
Do the right thing.
Please, smoke outside.
Until you can stop, go out for your kids.
Take the pledge. Call 1-800-513-1157.
Challenge to join the elite. And if you succeed, if you can master your fear, outsmart your enemy, and never yield even to yourself, you will be changed forever. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional staffer, current radio host, having a fierce debate with my good friend Mike Lane, who's a nice guy, except that he's a Republican supporting this administration. I don't know why. Maybe it's the fact that he works to elect Republicans for a living. But a lot of you are calling in. We like that. Keep your calls coming. Let's go to Tony in Reston. Tony, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. Thanks. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What's your view on this?
Well, I think that you're right in that, you know, the Bush administration has gone above and beyond its, you know, regular means. How superpowers shouldn't be that way. Innocent people are being held in Guantanamo. You know, we have multiple phone taps around the country. I would be surprised if you're listening to my phone call. You know, I was born and raised in Saudi Arabia. My parents were from Pakistan before we naturalized. You know, when I get to the airport, it's usually a disaster. So they're probably listening on this. Hi, Mr. President. I do think you're wrong, though.
Well, this is a public phone call, so he has a right to listen on this one. But Mike...
And I hope they are listening to this one.
No, but to this phone call, right. But that's okay. But Mike, I mean, it seems to me that the essence of our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, is innocent until proven guilty. The mere fact that someone is from Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan, and particularly if they're a naturalized American, I think we can actually spy more on immigrants. I don't have a problem with that. But particularly someone who's an American citizen, they have certain rights under this document, the Constitution. And I'm concerned that unless we have a court overseeing those rights, some president, whether or not it's Bush, but some president, if they're not constrained by the courts, the Constitution, and Congress, can go and just spy on all of us. Don't have a right to be concerned.
Mark, why was it that the congressional leadership all knew about this program? They had all been briefed about it. They all had all the details. And only one member of the Senate wrote a handwritten letter to Vice President Cheney saying, you know, I'm not sure I'm really on board with this whole thing. But not a single other member of Congress that knew about it. And by the leadership I'm talking about, you know, the top two or three in each party, in each house, plus the chairman of the intelligence committees, they all knew about it. And nobody voiced any objection.
I'm afraid your facts is wrong. Four people were notified. Four people only. The only Democrats that were notified were Pelosi and Senator Rockefeller, is my understanding. And Senator Rockefeller, as you know, wrote in handwriting because he was ordered by the presidential staff that told him he couldn't even tell his own staff. Here you have the presidential staff, they know about it, and they tell Senator Rockefeller, you can't even tell your own staff, you can't even put a letter on your computer system because your staff might read it, it's that secretive, and so he had to write the thing in handwriting. And my understanding is Pelosi also voiced objections to this. Here's the problem. If you tell members of Congress that this is going on, but you can't talk about it publicly, and you can't discuss it in your hearings, and the other members of the Intelligence Committee didn't know about it, they can't take effective guidance. They can't take effective monitoring. If this program was so good, if the president was behind it, he should have done it openly and honestly and said, you know what, I don't need warrants. He didn't do it, Mike.
He is doing it openly and honestly because...
Because he was caught by the New York Times.
Because,
that's why. Let me go to another caller.
Trying to promote a book, which, by the way, Rison's book flopped.
Well, you know, the New York Times should have told us a year ago, actually. Let's go to David from Alexandria. David, thanks for calling the Inside Scoop.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we need to get a few things straight. The president doesn't have to have a warrant.
He doesn't.
Those calls. No, really? He doesn't.
Well, where does the Constitution say that, David?
All you have to do is have a little more knowledge on the subject. How are you going to get a warrant on a 30-second phone call or a 2-minute phone call?
I'll tell you how you do
Within 72 hours after the fact, he can apply for a warrant.
Actually, you're right about that, David.
Now,
of course I'm right.
That's why I'm calling you.
Well, no, you're right about that. But just to be clear, the FISA law, he's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. If there's an emergency, you can go, you can get a warrant, and then within 72 hours later apply. But the president didn't do that.
Exactly, because he didn't do that, because people like you and the other side are playing politics with our national security. Why don't we just roll up all of our intelligence offices and just open the doors for another 9/11?
Heck, why don't we just burn the Constitution? I mean, it's meaningless, you know?
It isn't meaningless. It is when you can't trust the press to use responsible judgment on what
David,
is published.
David,
do you not think
David,
that
the Constitution
New York Times put the American
president?
Security in danger, the American people in danger by publishing that?
I think we're far more in danger by
answer,
a president.
Do you not think?
Yeah, not at all.
No,
I
really.
Think, no, let me tell you what,
you
David.
Don't think Al-Qaeda or anybody out there trying to do it.
David, I think under our Constitution, we have sufficient protections under our courts and our Constitution to spy on the people that need to be spied on and to protect the American citizens that don't need to be spied on. And my question for you before we go to the next caller is, do you think this Constitution constrains the president at all? And if so, how?
Well, of course it does. He has limited power.
What's his limited power in terms of eavesdropping? Does he have any? Does he have a limited power? Can he eavesdrop on every single conversation in the United States of America?
No, he cannot.
No? Why not?
You're...
Why not?
Because it...
Because the Fourth Amendment says
there
he needs a warrant. That's
Amendment.
Why
yes,
not.
But the point is, that's not what he's doing. He's eavesdropping on phone calls that originate in Afghanistan and in other places
to American citizens.
I don't have a problem with that.
Well, you know what? If the president didn't have a problem with it, he would have brought it to the Congress
gotten
a law to say it's okay. But he went around the law.
Then you lose that avenue of intelligence.
David, this is Mike. I want to thank you for your call. I agree with you, particularly, I mean, almost all of what you said, but particularly the point about the New York Times jeopardizing our national security. And for them to do so, to intentionally jeopardize our national security for the sole purpose of promoting a book of one of their reporters, just to me is typical of what the New York Times is all about.
Benjamin Franklin once said, "Those who would sacrifice their liberty for temporary security deserve neither liberty nor security." David, I thank you for your call as well, though I disagree with you. Let's go to Corinna from Alexandria. Corinna, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Hello, Corinna, you're on the air. Oh, we lost Corinna. Oh, that's too bad. We lost Corinna. This, I think, is the essence of the debate, folks. See, the debate is not, Mike, I got to say, I think the Republicans, David and others, are trying to say this is a debate about whether or not we should spy on Al-Qaeda. Every American, 99.9% of us, agrees we should spy on Al-Qaeda. But what I'm saying is use the law. Go through the legal avenues. Do it by the Constitution.
Right.
Do it by the book.
Let me ask you this, Mark. I really, most of the time I can predict what you'll say. This time I don't know what you will say.
Okay.
We have a situation where we know there are conversations going on with people. We don't know who the individuals are. We can just use the technology over at the National Security Agency to listen to all the satellite chatter, and we can listen to conversations between Americans and particular sectors of Afghanistan, Pakistan, things like that, that we would like to know about. Not knowing who anybody is, not knowing anything, we're just listening to all these. Do you have any objection to doing that to start with, to find out who the bad guys might be that we can then follow up on and get a warrant?
Show a court, get probable cause, go to the FISA court, and if the court approves it, I have no problem.
No, there is no probable cause at this point. We're just listening to every conversation into those areas. We don't have any probable cause. We don't know who the people are.
I think American citizens have a right to be innocent until proven guilty, and we shouldn't just listen in to all their conversations. Let's go on to Corinna from Alexandria. Corinna, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say that I think most Americans today are buying into a false sense of security that the Bush administration is feeding. People like Aaron and David are buying into this idea, and I think Bush should be impeached for lying to the American people and for violating my constitutional rights.
Corinna, I agree with you. Mike, I'm sure, does not. Go ahead, Mike.
Corinna, first of all, I know you tried several times to get through. I'm glad you're finally here. It's good to talk with you. People can disagree on this. Mark and I are having a wonderful discussion, and we do disagree on it. And you know, we're going to have we'll be friends afterwards, and I'll be friends with you, Corinne, I promise. But I think you're taking it a step too far. If you disagree with it and you want to fight it politically and or legally, that's fine. But I don't think there's a case for impeachment here the way you've suggested. And you know, you said you live in Alexandria. Is that the Alexandria part of Fairfax, Corinna?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you have Jim Moran as your congressman. I don't agree with much of what Jim Moran says. In fact, I agree with almost nothing of what Jim Moran says. But he had a town hall meeting with Jack Murtha about 10 days ago, which I attended. And at that point, Congressman Moran himself, when this question was raised, Moran said, absolutely not. There's nothing impeachable here at all.
Well, I disagree with Congressman Moran, and I agree with you, Corinna, and let me tell you why. If the president has a policy dispute with Congress or the courts, he can openly and honestly say, you know what, I need to go to courts without a warrant. I don't know why he needs to go to courts without a warrant, because as David correctly pointed out, if you've got an emergency, you can go and start the eavesdropping, and then 72 hours, a court can retroactively say it's okay. But if he's got a policy difference, he can openly and honestly, as he did where he said, I can imprison people for life without trial. We all thought he was wrong, but at least he told the American people about it. In this case, he went behind everybody's back, and he violated the law, which the Congressional Research Service agrees it was a clear violation. I don't know of anyone, by the way, apart from John Yoo, who, by the way, I went to Yale Law School with and is wrong on this. I don't know anyone who supports this idea. The reason he should be impeached is because he's not only breaking the law, but doing it behind people's backs.
Mark, the reason you don't tell anybody about this is because it's highly classified information. As David pointed out, this has to do with our national security. When the New York Times used their front page to tell Al-Qaeda that we were listening to them, that was beyond the pale.
First of all, Al-Qaeda knew we were listening to them. We know that bin Laden got rid of his cell phone in Tora Bora and escaped our troops that way. Number two, something more important. It seems to me that if Bush had merely followed the law, Mike, had merely gone to the FISA court and gotten a warrant, it would all be secret. Heck, we wouldn't be talking about it today. If he had merely followed the law and gone through the proper procedures, we could fight the war on terror to the extent that Al-Qaeda didn't know about it. They wouldn't know about it. It's only because he said, I'm above the law, I have to break the law, that some angry person within the administration, believing the president had gone wild, leaked it to the New York Times. Had he followed the law, we still wouldn't know about it.
A disgruntled employee who is probably not even eligible for whistleblower protection at this point.
I think they are.
At the case. Well,
we can argue that one.
I'll come back.
All right, fair enough. Go ahead. Make your point.
The point is, I do think we'd be arguing about it, even if he had gone through the FISA court, which, as you know, he has argued that there is no need to. And the reason that we would do it is because the New York Times is hell-bent on doing this stuff. And the fact that it was legal, the fact that it wasn't news, would have still been front page news to the New York Times.
Why do we even have a FISA court? Why do we have a secret court that can give secret warrants? I guess we don't need it. Heck, why do we need courts at all? The president's above the law.
The FISA court acts very, very well in times of peace. It does not act very well in times of war.
If that's the president's position, then he should work to change the law. But tell me this, why doesn't FISA act well in times of war? I think it works just fine. It worked well during the Persian Gulf War. It worked well during the I don't know what other wars. The Bosnian War.
You don't know that the FISA court was consulted all that much during the Persian Gulf War.
I know that
because it's all classified.
I know that every president prior to Bush. I know that Carter. It was passed under Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Carter, Reagan, Bush Sr., and Clinton all believed that they were not above the law. All believed that they had to go to the FISA court to get this warrant. This is the first president that thinks he's not. We got a few seconds left. Let me just end with Lee from Fairfax. Lee, make your point quick.
Where have you been? This has been going on since John F. Kennedy. We've always done this. You better wake up.
Well, Lee, you're right. We have always done this. They did spy on Martin Luther King, and they thought it was so wrong that they passed a law in 1978 to stop it. And if they feel it's wrong today to spy on the American people, they need to pass another law, go through the Constitution, not try to go around the law. That's why I do think he should be impeached. Mike, I'll give you the last word.
Well, Mark, I wish you luck on that one.
I didn't say it'd be easy.
You know, we're going to have a long debate about this. It is going to wind its way through the courts. The ACLU is not going to rest until they take this one all the way to the top and get a definitive decision. It's my lay opinion, I'm not a lawyer, it's my lay opinion, political opinion, that the Supreme Court is going to support the president's authority to do this in time of war. They're going to strictly limit it to times of war and not give him a blanket authority to do it in times of peace.
And given that the war on terror, according to the president, can last decades, we're in war forever. We're in George Orwell's 1984, and the president can take power and become our dictator, right?
I hope not, but I'm not going to argue with that possibility.
Well, that's a problem, folks. When you have perpetual war, and you have a president that believes he doesn't have to obey the Constitution in times of war, what do you end up with, folks? You end up with dictatorship. And
I'll say this. I will grant you that a lot of this has to do with trust. And you don't trust the president.
That's right, I don't.
I do. I am scared to death as to what will happen if this goes on and we get a Democratic president.
Which is why you should join with me in saying that a president of either party has got to follow the law. Mike, thanks again for coming here on the Inside Scoop. Thank you for all your calls. We are here virtually every Monday right here on Channel 10. Tune in again next Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, or maybe the Monday thereafter, for another edition of the Inside Scoop.